This is a replay of the Wednesday night, April 29th, WGN show. We started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call, and I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from OneVoip. For the world's best customer service, it's OneVoip. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. 3 hours to spend together, and if it's on your mind, it'll be on mine. I'll play a request as well. So, I'd always like to start with something I find interesting, and this from Engineer Bob, who sends me just terrific links. And I was surprised. Now, I must admit, I don't know that much about T-Rex, as in the large dinosaur, which lived about, 67 million years ago, so not real recently. But when you think about these, I won't say alleged animals, because we've seen so many skeletons and all that, that you know, there's no reason to disbelieve that they existed. But who knows, 67 million years ago. We do know, supposedly, they could reach about 21 feet if they're standing upright and weigh about 20,000 pounds. So this is not a diminutive creature. So imagine this 20,000-pound, 21-foot-high creature roaming the earth. Think about how it is with each step. The ground shakes, does it not? Yeah. No, actually, this is the deal. The T-Rex ran on tiptoes. I know, can you even imagine? And, you know, kind of like an 8-ton chicken clucking about in your backyard. So it makes a certain amount of sense. So say archaeologists and the like, given birds are descended from dinosaurs, but it doesn't really square with the image that we would have of the 10-ton creature, to say the least. But those who are studying its gait and movement have determined not only did it run on its tiptoes, you know, the image there is just classic, but before you start really laughing, this is a nightmare, because running on its tiptoes, it could run 37 feet a second, so they say. I don't know how they know, but yes, can you imagine 37 feet a second somehow makes it even more terrifying than if it lumbered away the ground most of us think it did. So there you have your latest in T-Rex facts. But we'll move on to something completely else, don't you know? We're talking to Mike in Elmwood Park. And Mike, yeah, last night you requested some Nat King Cole, Lazy Hazy Crazy Days of Summer, and Ramblin' Rose, and you'll hear them both, but you want to add to the stash?
Actually, Raleigh, my wife's birthday is tomorrow.
Oh, yeah? Well, happy birthday.
And I was wondering if I could get a request on for my wife's name is Lois.
Okay.
And I was wondering if I could get an Elvis tune on it.
What Elvis tune?
Can't Help Falling in Love with You.
Okay. Wise men say. All right. Sure. We'll do that for Lois. I'll try to do it tonight.
I appreciate it, Raleigh.
My pleasure. How long have you been married?
36.
Wow. All right.
36 years, been together 49.
Wow. Okay. Well, we'll get Can't Help Falling in Love on for Lois. Thanks for calling, Mike.
You're welcome. Thanks,
right.
Raleigh.
So, 888-876-5593. We'll take us to John in Covington. John, welcome back to WGN Radio. What's up?
Hey, I just wanted to let you know, today, during the day, I discovered a female vocalist I never knew existed before. Her name is Julia Lee.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God.
By the way, this goes back. This woman was born at the turn of the last century.
1902.
Yeah, yes. She was known for Dirty Blues, so I'm not...
That's why I'm calling. It's like, oh, my God.
Yeah, it was all
but she does have a good voice, and, you know, the musicians behind her are excellent.
Yeah, no, it was all double entendre, you know, and that was it was a style at the time. And her biggest hit was, you know, Opportunity Knocks, Snatch and Grab It.
Well, yeah, and you know, I'm not a prude by any means, and I've covered my share of ground, so to speak, when it comes to business, I guess. Like I say, I'm no prude, but when you can make me blush, you've done something. I mean, and you know what? You said the one title, I'm too much of a gentleman to tell you the other title.
Oh, there's many titles as far as that goes. And
just filled with sexual innuendo.
Oh, yeah, that was the whole deal. There was a band leader in Kansas City, the Novelty Singing Orchestra, and that was really popular, again, you know, like 1920 or before, and that was George Lee, and same name, yes.
Yeah, that's right. Heard about it.
Right, exactly. And I don't think that she, you know, she recorded several things, but I don't think she actually had a hit until Tall, Dark, and Handsome. And Won't You Come Over to My House? Yeah.
They said she had like five of them on the R&B charts that did really well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it wasn't called R&B then at the time, but yes, Race Records. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, this was a style that became very popular. You remember Benny Bell's Shaving Cream and all that. There were a ton of different ways they came about. And then later with R&B, you have some classic stuff like Big 10-inch, Bull Moose Jackson, you know, When I Take Out My Big 10-inch, Record of the Band That Plays the Blues.
Oh, for heaven's sake. Yeah. Like I say, I'm too much of a gentleman to tell you the title.
Well, no, you know, and she did, you know, all sorts of things. They all did, you know, It Ain't the Meat, It's the Motion, Make Your Daddy Wanna Rock the Swallows.
Exactly.
You know, so this was well known as far as that. And
let me ask you, did radio stations refuse to play some of that?
It's not that they refused to play it. It's that Race Records usually weren't on commercial stations. Remember?
I see what you're saying.
You know, this is there were probably a few who were you know, selling time by the hour, and somebody probably did. But as far as standard fare, you were not hearing much in terms of music from African Americans of any type.
So, no, I believe that. Yes, I do.
So, yeah, and she died, and she was in her 50s.
1958.
Okay, and she was in her 50s at the time. I think she had a
56.
Heart attack. Yeah, and...
She had a heart attack while she was taking a nap.
Okay. Yeah, but part of the problem, you know, I always say if you want a headline, you got to die on a slow news week. Well, she died the same week as Tommy Dorsey and Art Tatum, so it was...
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was not much of a...
She got the short end of that stick.
Yeah, but, you know, there were so many things, you know. And she did a version of I'll Get Along Somehow, which, of course, is just a classic record that's been redone, and the soliloquy from it has been in everything, including the Velveteen.
Before we hang up, I just wanted to tell you, now, she does several tunes that I listened to today, and they're in French. I don't speak French, but God only knows if you translate them what they're going to say.
I don't think she spoke French either. So
she didn't.
I doubt it. I strongly, strongly doubt it.
Well, she baked it somehow.
And so... But yeah, there were a ton of things. You said there was a title that you were too much of a gentleman to pronounce. I'm trying to think of, because, you know, I know Tall, Dark, and Handsome, and Won't You Come Over to My House.
You want me to tell you, I'll tell you.
Yeah, what is it?
Don't Come Too Soon.
Oh, yeah, well, you know, I mean, come on. think about records like Baby Won't You Come Quick, and that's the 80s. All right, so yeah, Don't Come Too Soon, and you know, Billboard did a review of that actually at the time, and I think what they said is that jukebox operators should listen carefully before installing. So
absolutely.
No, you know, come on. Yeah. Well, you know, same year she recorded "It Comes In Like a Lion and Goes Out Like a Lamb." And
exactly. Yes.
Capitol didn't release it. And it's been on some compilations later, which is why we know about it. But Capitol wouldn't release it in 49. They said, no, we're not going there. But a ton of stuff, and you know, recording pretty much up till the time she died. And she was on Capitol for a lot of stuff. She was on OK and some R&B labels as well. But when you think about how many years she was on Capitol, that's pretty amazing.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm surprised Capitol
This is the house that Nat built, you know.
And that's another. Yeah, was no saint either. But.
Well, but you know, he certainly.
Janella Hutton, man. Yeah. Well. Oh my God.
But he was really responsible for a great deal of their success, which is what ticked off, of course, Frank Sinatra. That's why Frank Sinatra started the revenge label, called it Reprise.
Reprise, yes.
Yeah. But she was on Brunswick for a little while, and she was on OK for a little while. But then she made it to the big leagues, and like I say, was on Capitol for a number of years, and then a couple little labels in the 50s. But So well aware, but this was a very popular, you know, genre at the time.
Yes, I figured it out. But yeah. I appreciate the talk, and I'll talk to you next time.
Yeah, I'll try to find something by her. I don't know if there's anything on this computer.
I don't know if you could.
Oh, I can. If not, okay. I know Bull Moose Jackson Big 10 inches on here, so if not, I'll do that. All right, thanks. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
All right, so, and the Swallows, of course, it ain't the meat, it's emotion. Make your daddy want to rock. But Julia Lee, I got to check that out. But I have written down, because we don't want to forget Lois's Elvis request, because we'll do that tonight for sure. If it's on your mind, it'll be on mine. Otherwise, I'll just talk about something close to nothing, but maybe different from the night before. Coming up on WGN Radio.
Come and see me, baby. Please don't come too soon. Come and see me, baby, but please don't come too soon. We got a date at 8, and it's only afternoon. The way you rush me, it ain't right. I know you just can't wait for tonight. Remember, love's like a mashed potato. When you eat it up now, you won't have it later. Come on over, but please don't come too soon. Impatient daddy, I know how much you care. Impatient daddy, I know how much you care. So Papa, just take time, 'cause there's lots of it to spare. You got about 5 or 6 hours to kill. Try running up and down that same old hill. You know you try wrestling, get too many falls. Get a grip on your bat and smack a few balls. Come on over.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. And yeah, in the latter 40s, early 50s, there were so many of these songs. And most of them were blues, but not only. And, you know, 60 Minute Man, we've talked a lot about Billy Ward and the Dominoes, because in the chorus, when they say, gonna rock 'em and roll 'em all night long, that's where, you know, rock and roll as for music came from that lyric. And that's a long story, but okay. And and don't think Alan Freed, although that was part of it. But interestingly, there were literally dozens and dozens of these songs. And this goes back to the 30s. You know, Lil Johnson, Press My Button, Ring My Bell. Oh, God. But then going into the 50s, you wouldn't expect Dinah Washington. But if you remember Dinah, big, long, sliding thing. So a ton of that. And all of it, you know, a lot of metaphors and play on words. Yeah, my handyman ain't handy no more. Yeah. Well, there you have that. Of course, Handyman, the original Sparks of Rhythm, Jimmy Jones wrote it and, of course, later did it. So no shortage of that. And they are a lot of fun. And I guess to an extent, that's still going on. But unfortunately now, the difference is pretty much, you know, you want to lay it all out there, you can. Won't necessarily get airplay, but you absolutely can record it. But so yeah, great lines, and you could go through all of R&B and top 40 from the 50s and 60s too, and find a ton of them. All right, so 888-876-5593, 888-88-Raleigh, and so here it is, April 29th, and Johnny turned 85. Okay, you're saying, who's Johnny? Well, Santo and Johnny. Yeah, you remember Sleepwalk. Yeah, and so that's the deal. And I don't know if Santo is still with us. He'd be 89. But Johnny was playing as recently as a couple of years ago. Carl Gardner would have been 98 today. Yeah, sadly died in Florida in 2011. And Tommy James is 79. Okay, how about that? Yeah. And Bobby Marchand. Oh, Bobby Marchand. Talk about your double entendres. Oh, man. Bobby Marchand would have been 96. Yeah, born in 1930 in Youngstown, Ohio. And just great, great stuff. Billy Mize. Oh, yeah. Would have been 97. And, of course, yeah, my favorite, Make It Rain. Which, yeah, so there's a lot of that. All right, so 888-876-5593. Robert is in LaGrange. Welcome back to WGN Radio.
Yeah, Raleigh, I didn't realize you were going back that far with requests. I have a few requests.
Oh, yeah?
From that era. I always liked Vaughn Monroe's version of Ghost Riders in the Sky. I don't know if you have it or not.
Okay.
Yeah, and Patti Page, I think the ladies like Patti Page more, but I remember hearing it must have been one of her original hits, beautiful song called With My Eyes Wide Open, I'm Dreaming.
Okay.
Yeah, and let me see. Oh, and The Four Lads, No Not Much.
Okay. Yeah, you're not going back that far. You're mostly talking 50s pop standards.
Yeah, probably early mid-50s, yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll add them to the list. Happy to do it. Thank you for calling.
Surely.
Okay. All right. So we'll get to Kimberly from Dalton after the news. And yeah, kind of quiet tonight. Don't think that I don't save things to talk about, but would just as well be talking to you. Maybe I'll have to play some Billy Mize too. But I don't know. I'm gonna probably defer to your requests. And not sure we'll do anything by the Ronettes. But it was sad to notice Ned Tally's passing, which means all of them are now past tense. Yeah. All right. So that's where we'll pick it up after the news right here on WGN Radio.
Well, my baby gave a party the other night. The party was getting dead. I spied a piano in the corner. Looked at my baby and said, baby, let me bang your box. Baby, let me bang your box. Baby, let me play your 88. Gonna play to the whole house rocks. When I was young, they called me Piano Bill. When I was young, they called me Piano Bill. Cause I played so fine, gave everybody a thrill. Baby, let me bang your box. 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 Baby, let
me play your 88. Gonna play till the whole house rocks.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. That's the Toppers, some Brooklyn group who did nothing else, in 1954 on Jubilee. And, yeah, I love to play your piano. Let me bang your box. That's the title. And, yeah, probably the quintessential of all the double entendres in that period of time. As I say, you heard it, well, you hear it to this day, but I always think of El DeBarge, Baby, Won't You Come Quick, in the 80s. So maybe we'll do that too. I don't know. But in the meantime, Kimberly is in Dalton. Welcome back to WGN Radio. How's Christopher?
Oh, he's getting big, Raleigh. Very big. He's a beautiful boy, and I'll try to send you another picture. I meant all week to send you my phone number about that record, but I kept forgetting, so I will do that. And my mom sends you her love. She's feeling a little weak lately. We had trouble getting to some doctors because of transportation issues. I also have a problem with my eyes here and there, so a dark day or an evening, I can't drive to things or back from things. So we found a lovely social worker today called from UI Health, and she offered to find us rides, which she did, which we never knew we could get.
That's great.
So we've been trying to work on patients, so many things that haven't worked. So anyway, she has now arranged some rides, I think, that will make our life easier and able to get there now.
Good. That'll be excellent.
It will. It really will. And so that's what's going on with us that way. But I wanted to expound on what you were talking about. I'm sure you heard of it, because Mae West used to do A Guy What Takes His Time.
Oh, of course. She was famous for that stuff.
And then I used to do one a few years back with the pianist that Nina Simone did, Sugar in My Bowl. So they all had quite some meanings. There are a lot out there. But anyway, to add to the collection. But if you have the time to play one of those at one point,
sure. You know, I Need a Little Sugar in My Bowl goes all the way back to 1931 originally, and Nina Simone did it in 1962, but that's not to say we can't play that version, but literally there are over 100 versions of that song. On some of them, it's I Need a Little Sugar in My Bowl, and others it's I Want a Little Sugar in My Bowl, but it's the same song.
Yes, but they're both in there. The second chorus will be both, but I never knew there were that many. I've only ever heard her.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, as recently, Queen Latifah did a version of it a few years ago.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It was written by Clarence Williams, and this goes back to the 30s, you know. And Bessie Smith did it, and probably well-known for that. In fact, when Nina Simone would do it in person, she'd always say, you know, this was the Bessie Smith song, and as far as that goes. And so, so.
And we used a little Sugar in My Bowl in burlesque, too.
Of course. Of course. You know, this was a thing. You know, sadly, I think it went out of favor more because now we can say anything these days. But back then, it was hidden in double entendre. And I thought it was a lot more fun.
My great aunts, when I was little, I mean, they would sit and talk about men or their way around, you know, all the ladies had their bunco games or whatever, their way around sex or whatever, but it was always a hidden meaning. It wasn't out there.
Right.
But you would sit there, you could laugh, and as I got older, you would laugh hilariously because you knew what it was, but yet it wasn't said.
Right, right, exactly. Well, that's what I think made it so, a lot of it was really creative wordplay.
Yes. And you know what? I think it was much better that way.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Absolutely. There was creativity in it. I'm with you 100%. But yeah, I've got that Nina Simone, so I will definitely play that for you.
Okay. Well, Raleigh, thank you so much.
All right.
And you sound good. You sounded really great. So I hope you're feeling well because you've been sounding really great.
Oh, well, thank you so much. You're my best to Jean.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Have a great
day. Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, so 888-876-5593. Yeah, I really think the creativity when you wouldn't just splay it all out was probably a lot more fun. So we got Robert's requests, I think. Now, Jack in St. Charles, welcome to WGN Radio.
Howdy.
Yeah, what you want?
Well, there was a song from 1931 that is in the past 20 or 30 years, was done by Ian Whitcomb and Robert Crumb and his chief serenaders. and originally done by Harry Williams Orchestra, called My Girl's Pussy.
Yes. Okay. You
betcha. I don't know if you have any access to any one of those, but they're used to be on the jukebox with, with Tom.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's the interesting thing. Of course, when kids heard the Ian Whitkin version, they thought it was new, which is always the funny stuff, because nothing's new under the sun. So, absolutely.
Particularly with most, outside of that one song he had during the British invasion,
yeah,
which at the time was new, You Turned Me On.
Right, right.
The rest of the stuff, he wrote books, a couple of books on popular music of the 20th century. He was a DJ.
Yep.
I never heard his program, but he's a DJ. And he toured his last year, he toured the U.S. with an ukulele band.
Uh-huh. Yeah, absolutely. The Orange Blossom Orchestra. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Unfortunately, he died on my 73rd birthday.
Oh, really? April 19th?
Yeah.
Because I know he was an April 19th death. That's your birthday?
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, it's a historically significant day, as you know.
Yeah. Jane Mansfield's birthday.
Well, and the Battle of Lexington and Concord.
And it's ancient history.
Yeah. Well, a little more recently, we had a few. We had Waco and Oklahoma City. So,
Yeah.
Well, happy birthday. All right. Well, I'll try to find that for you.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Talk to you later.
Appreciate it. All right, so 888-876-5593 takes us directly to, let's say goodbye to Jack and say hello to Fran in Austin. Fran, what's happening tonight?
Oh, not a whole lot, Raleigh. You were talking about these double entendre songs, and I was thinking about so many of them.
Yeah, Dr. Demento specials, all of them.
Oh, yeah. But I was trying to think, was it Bull Moose Jackson that did that, Get Off the Table, Mabel, the $2 is for the beer?
Oh, I remember that. I think so, but I don't know that for sure. So, yeah.
Because I've been looking for that song, and it sounds like him, but I wasn't really sure. So, And then, of course, you just played Baby, Can I Bang Your Box, and that reminded me of something else that Dr. Demento used to play. Please don't bang on the piano.
Oh, yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, it is Bull Moose Jackson, Get Off the Table, Man.
Oh, okay.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, good.
Yes, so I will be happy to play that. And
okay.
Yeah, that's...
he had so many. I Want a Hot Dog for My Roll.
Right. Right, and then there were other people who did it, and they, later versions where it was Get Off the Table, Mabel, the money's for the beer, but I like the $2 for the beer.
I like the $2 better.
Me too.
You're absolutely right. I liked it better when it was clever.
Yes.
I mean, it's not clever just to say it out.
Exactly.
It's the cleverness of the wordplay that...
Yes, absolutely.
Really enjoy. I had a friend who, a neighbor of ours, and we were always doing those things back and forth, and somebody complained to management that he was being, what would be the word?
Obscene?
Sexually abusing, or, abusive to me.
Oh, God.
And it was funny because Gary was sitting right there and he was laughing just as hard as I was.
Right. No.
He knows I don't mean anything by it and that Ed didn't mean anything by it. But, some people just,
People with too much time on their hands.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that's why, a lot of that, that's another reason a lot of that isn't done anymore.
Probably, but I think literally, and you're right, political correctness kills everything. But I think more than that, the fact that it's all out there for anyone to hear in any form and see, then the fun stuff, the double entendre stuff, just doesn't make it, and it should.
Right. Oh, another one that's politically incorrect is, what is that one, Ella Fitzgerald did, he's stone cold dead in the market.
Right, yes.
I kill nobody but me husband.
Yeah, that's right. And after all, he was my husband, so, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, so, anyway, I just thought I'd talk about a couple of those great songs.
Yeah, no, that is great. And I think Louis Jordan also did Stone Cold Dead and had a nice version of that. And I was, when you were saying that, I was thinking, God, wouldn't that be a great intro for Dateline? I mean, because it covers so many of their murders. So,
oh, yeah.
Well, let me see. let me see if, because that Ella Fitzgerald might have been backed by Louis Jordan. That's what I want to find out, because that was like 1939 or whatever, but then they recorded it again in the 40s. I'm going to find out, and we'll definitely play that.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot, Raleigh.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling. Yes, Ella and Her Fellas. It's on that album, but I'm pretty sure, you know, because I always thought of it as Louis Jordan, but I'm pretty sure that he backed her. Well, we'll find out. And yes, of course, we'll do some Bull Moose Jackson. I mean, other than Big 10-inch, of course. Why not? So 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh, let's talk about the Sea Crane Company. Oh, man, I always say best reception, and that includes the Wi-Fi radio. Now, reception there, we're not talking about AM or FM, but we are talking about how well does it connect to your wireless router. And if you've got a wireless router or wireless access point, you know that some things connect better than others, and especially if you're in a situation where it's lackluster to everything and you want something that's going to hold a signal and be there, the CC Wi-Fi 3 is about as good as it gets. Now, the beauty of this is how easy it is to use. I plunked one down by John, and he didn't even pick up the manual. He just set it up immediately, was listening to me within moments. But you don't have to listen to me. You can. But you can listen to, I would say, probably well over 100,000 different streams. I thought about this because usually they'll say like 30,000 different radio stations. No, the number is much higher than that. And the real heartbreak, of course, is that it's hard to find things that you don't know exist. But you'd be surprised how easy this is to use and what you will see. Now, you'll get everything you want to hear of which you know, and many things you will want to hear if you only knew. There's no apps to download, no microphone that's listening in, no ads on the screen, no monthly fees. It's, you know, it's just easy, and it's got a full-size remote control, and it sounds good. Rich, full, clear. Sounds a lot better than your smartphone, I guarantee you that. And, yeah, no static, no dropouts. So just a terrific deal. And maybe your Wi-Fi router is not too close to where you want to put the Wi-Fi radio. Won't matter with the CC Wi-Fi 3. You can go online anytime and take a look at ccradio.com, the CC Wi-Fi 3. And if you can't, well, if you can't, you probably don't want a Wi-Fi radio. But on the other hand, maybe you do and you've got some questions about it. You want to talk to a real person. Well, after taking a look at it at ccradio.com, feel free to call them, 800-522-8863. 800-522-TUNE. They will answer all your questions. We'll walk through everything you can, order by phone. But if you can go online, take a look at this radio. If you've been looking for a really good Wi-Fi radio, reasonably priced and no muss, no fuss, easy to use, it's the CC Wi-Fi 3. You tell them Raleigh sent you from WGN Radio.
He's stone cold dead in the market. He's stone cold dead in the market. He's stone cold dead in the market. I killed nobody but my husband.
Last night I went out drinking. When I came home I gave her a beating. So she caught up the rolling pin and went to work on my head till she bashed it in. I like old dead in the market. Stone cold dead in the market. I like old dead in the market. She killed nobody but her husband.
I lick him with the pot on the frying pan. I lick him with the pot on the frying pan. I lick him with the pot on the frying pan. And if I kill him, he had it coming. Man, he's stone cold dead in the market. He's stone cold dead in the market. He's stone cold dead in the market. I killed nobody but my husband.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. That's on Decca. That's Ella Fitzgerald along with Louis Jordan and his Timpani Five in 1946. And they had a fine time with that. Now, if you're wondering what the deal is with the accent, and I don't know if I have this, but the original was a song by a guy from Trinidad and Tobago, and Wilmuth Houdini was his name. I don't know if it was his real name or whatever. And in when he put it out in 1939, it was just called He Had It Coming. And right. And I don't know how Louis Jordan got a hold of it or convinced Ella Fitzgerald to sing it, but that is the deal. And of course, if you listen to the whole thing, the upshot of it is that he threatens that he's coming back to exact some revenge, and she reminds him, you don't come back from the grave. And yeah, but the refrain, which is the humor in it, is she didn't kill anybody else but her husband. All right, so there you are. I got to see if I have that Wilmuth Houdini, because that only vaguely remember that. That would be interesting. So, but otherwise, we've got several to play. Nina Simone, of course, and Get Off the Table, Mabel. And I didn't forget the Elvis request for Lois, the Birthday Girl, and we'll have that as well, I promise. But 888-876-5593, 8888 Raleigh. So what else do we have to say? I love the headline, Worst Year to Be Alive. And I thought to myself, man, you could make a case for almost any year. Of course, the present year, because, you know, we don't know what the future brings. And for those of us who like to read novels by reading the end of it first, knowing how it turns out, and then reading it, not knowing what the future brings makes it a tough time. But historians put that aside and took a look in terms of factual evidence and determined there is a worst year. Now, that alone's interesting, don't you think? Yes, 536 CE. Yes, that's AD for the rest of us who never changed our ways. And so if you're wondering why 536 is so bad, well, we now know. We wondered for a while what we, archaeologists and such historians, wondered. But a massive volcano erupted and filled the air with volcanic ash. And, of course, the majority of the people who it affected had absolutely no idea what was happening. They didn't feel the volcano. They just knew it was very dark for a very long time. Yeah, allegedly the sun didn't shine for 18 months. And, you know what that means, of course. We're talking 536 BE. Crops, there basically were none. And so crops failed, widespread famine, starvation, economic stagnation. And, and it was an overnight thing. But like I say, historians and all those who look into this stuff, academics, didn't take any of this seriously, all this anecdotal evidence, until, I'd say, within the last 40 years for sure, when they started to examine tree rings in Ireland, as far away as Ireland, and more recently in the last decade, a study pointing to a volcano, sure enough. So all that talk turned out to be true. And historians say, well, it wasn't just the worst year, but it was the beginning of the worst year to be alive, because what happened then was the first plague. And also the Little Antique Ice Age followed the volcanic eruption, which lasted for over a century, 660 to 680, depending upon location where you were. So it was not good. But then there are others who say, well, don't forget Mount Tambora. Let's talk about April the 18th. Let's talk about the news. I think the news is coming up, and then we'll pick it up more recently, I think. Well, certainly with more double entendre records right here on WGN Radio. Oh, excuse me. I don't have to leave yet. Adam says no. We don't. He told me that earlier, and I didn't remember. He told me I had breaks or didn't have breaks, but I guess I didn't. Lots of things about presidential news. I don't mean the current denizens of the White House. I mean going back there and their hobbies. But most interesting to me was what presidents have to pay for themselves. You know, you think, well, yeah, you get free rent in the White House, that's true, but believe it or not, you have to pay for your own groceries. Yeah, I don't know how that works, but apparently when the first family moves into the White House, the fridge is not stocked. And apparently Michelle Obama confirmed this. That's right. Groceries are their responsibility if the couple has moved into the White House. And, of course, every family likes to make it their own. You know, they redecorate. But did you know that that's not covered by tax dollars? New drapes, a different couch? the denizens of the White House have to buy it themselves, any personal item as far as that goes. So, yeah, they can be at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue for 18 years, but if they want to make it theirs, the upkeep and all that, yeah, the basic stuff, that's going to be paid for. But anything specialized, not to mention the upkeep of their home, not away from the White House, because most of them didn't give up their home base. Well, that's their responsibility too. Now, how about the clothing? Yeah, do you ever wonder about that? Not only do they have to buy their own clothing, yeah, those designer duds, well, sometimes they're donated, but not usually, but they also have to pay to dry clean it. Now, if they want to send it to the White House laundry, that's included. But should they need dry cleaning or want it washed by hand or whatever, that's on them. Who knew? All right, so we'll talk to Ken in Prospect Heights right after the news. Herb Alpert, that's a good subject. I'll do that. Well, I hope he didn't die. I better look that up. See, now that Carol's gone, I don't know anything anymore. Well, we'll see what I do know after the news right here on WGN Radio.
In the diner on the edge of town, I know a waitress named Mabel. She'll bring you up when you're feeling down, always ready, willing and able. She's the best girl around, and she's got the biggest table.
Get off the table, Mabel.
Well, $2 for the beer.
Get off the table, Mabel.
Well, $2 for the beer. The service is good, would could, but you can't do that in here. We were downtown one night, me and my buddy Chuck. We were hungry for a bite, but really down on our luck. So we went to eat at Mabel's, only cost us $20. Hooray!
Get off the table, Mabel.
$2 for the beer.
Get off the table, Mabel.
Well, the $2 is still for the beer. Sir, good, I would if I could, but you can't do that in here. Roll!
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. There it is, 1952 on King. Get off the table, Mabel. The $2 is for the beer. And a Apple Moose Jackson. And of course, later, Dr. Demento really brought that to life. Excuse me. All right, 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh, that takes us to Ken in Prospect Heights. What's happening, Ken?
Good evening, Raleigh. How are you?
I think I'm here. How are you?
I'm doing well. Good. You know, I was going through my dad's record collection the other day, and I came across a bunch of interesting things. I found some Elvis Presley 78s with, rather than 45s, which I didn't know that he had 78s out. I thought everything was on a 45 with him back then.
No, no. 78s were still being pressed really through the 50s. And in some cases, some labels that had their own pressing plants could only press 78s. But in the case of Sun, which is probably what you found on the Elvis stuff, some was shellac, meaning the 78s, and some were 45s. Remember, this was the big war between Columbia, which was debuting 33 and a third, and RCA, which was debuting 45. And man, this was heated in the 40s. And who knew who was going to win? And ultimately what happened, of course, is the single was on 45, and that was all of RCA's domain, and the 33 and a third became the album, and that was Columbia.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
So, I came across some Herb Alpert records, and my dad had, it seems like he has every album, even with the little controversial album with the girl all in the whipped cream, which was
actually it was shaving cream, but yes, it was supposed to look like whipped cream. Whipped Cream and Other Delights was the number one album in Billboard magazine for 1966. So at a time when the Beatles and everything else, Whipped Cream and Other Delights was just huge for him.
Well, I remember as a young boy staring at that album cover when I was little.
Right.
And my mom used to go, she used to take it away from me. She goes, you can't look at that. So
that's funny.
But it was interesting to note. I started looking online just to get a little history about him. And I can't believe, you know, every time I'm amazed at every artist that you talk about, it's like there had to be 1,000 record labels out back in the day. And I'm so amazed at how all of them are basically gone now. And even the controversy that Herb Alpert had in starting his label A&M, because as a musician, he wanted to have more creativity control and he wanted to have control over all the recording. And so he ended up starting his own label. That's from what I've read,
you know,
about him.
Interesting. I'm pretty sure I've read the same things. They claim that he had been working for Bob Keane at Keane Records and wanted his own label. They're forgetting a label. And Herb Alpert in the 50s was with Dory. And in fact, he named his daughter Dory after the label. Not the other way around. And Dory was owned by a couple of guys, also from the Boyle Heights area. This was an area near downtown Los Angeles, heavily Jewish immigrants. And two guys owned Dory. Newman was one of them, and they later split. One got Era, and the other got another label. But in any event, Dory was a great little label. And Jan and Dean, you know, he produced Baby Talk. That was on Dory. And nobody remembers the Dory part for whatever reason.
So, you know, I'm just amazed at all of the, like I said earlier, the labels that have come and gone. Was it like everybody who had a record or started their own label? Why were there so many labels back then?
Well, because there could be. There are a number of things, but the key, if you're an independent label, you've got a problem. And this is, by the way, the reason that Dick Clark was the star of Payola, because if you could get it on Bandstand, you wound up with a national hit because it happened simultaneously. The problem is, if you're a small label, you don't have distribution, and therein lies your problem. If you can get distribution, you've got a different thing, but if you don't have it, you're going to wind up with a rolling hit. You know, it's a hit in Buffalo, then a few months later it's a hit in Pittsburgh or Cleveland, but you never have it all at once. And that's the big problem. But it was very easy and very, very cheap to have a record label. It was also cheap to press the stuff. And actually, in the 40s, a lot of people like Leon Rene, who was just wonderful, had his own pressing plant. Unfortunately, that pressing plant was 78. So shellac. So when 45s and you know, became the de facto standard for single records, he was out of business with that pressing plant. So you know, not expensive at all, but the key, the money. You know, a lot of people will say, is there much money in the record business? Here's where the money was. If you own the publishing rights to these songs, now you're in clover. But as far as making the records, not much money.
Yeah, and that's what I've been reading about all these artists. Like, you know, Tommy James got, you know, he was taken.
Oh, well, yes and no. The true story about that has only partially come out, and that had to do with a scam that occurred in Pittsburgh. They used to take flops and repress them and sell them as bootlegs. And normally, if the artist came to town, they threatened to kill him, and that was the end of it. For whatever reason, Tommy James come to town, and they said, hey, you're a big star. We're going to send you out on tour. And, of course, he didn't have a band at that point because the guys graduated high school. So he had to get the band from the airport lounge and all that. But, you know, where did they wind up? On Moish Levy's label, on Roulette, of course. And, of course, Tommy talks a lot about his days on Roulette. Not unusual.
But it just seems like back then there was a lot of that going on, like you just said earlier. Like the record company would take the publishing rights, and they'd barely pay these guys any money.
Okay, let me tell you the logic. Let me tell you the logic in that. These were mostly independent guys who came back from World War II, couldn't find jobs in corporations or whatever, started their own little businesses, and a lot of them wound up in the record business, and some of them came out of plastics and other things. But in any event, it didn't cost much to produce a record. You know, we're talking a couple hundred bucks maybe, not much to produce it. And as far as that goes, the logic of these guys was, what do you mean they're asking for royalties? They're getting bigger money on the road because of us. They should be paying us for publicity. I mean, that's literally the way the thinking was. Now, the reality, though, is This is all small business. And if you look at all the top 40, for the most part in the 50s, you're talking in early 60s, very small business. You know, people talk a lot about the Beatles and they talk about how the Beatles changed music. Well, I'll tell you what, I don't care about the sound. What the Beatles did, and this was amazing, they sold albums. And when that happened in January of 1964 and Meet the Beatles and introducing the Beatles are flying off the shelves, this is the first time Top 40 is selling albums. Well, now there's going to be some money coming. And then, of course, the labels by the mid-60s, they're starting to get in clover because they're selling albums and then underground and progressive and all that. So that's what led to big money in the music business. But in the 50s, it was a business of singles. And, you know, most of the money, you know, jukebox operators were your biggest buyers.
You know, I never thought about that until you just stated that. You're right. Everybody was just releasing a hit. Nobody was selling albums.
Right.
They were selling
right,
singles.
Because many of them didn't even record enough things for an album. Moish Levy at Roulette, to his credit, actually, with the Playmates, released At Play with the Playmates in the 50s. And I remember thinking, well, an album, how about this? And but the Beatles changed the landscape, and it made the music business big business.
Well, I ended up playing every Herb Alpert record that my dad had, and it's just amazing. I thought he was just a really good musician.
Yeah.
Loved the style of music. You know, not even thinking of his name, I thought he was Hispanic of culture. And,
well,
and he's not.
No, not at all.
And I found an interesting note on the Mexican Taxi. I guess on the 45, there's 8 honks. But on the album, there's only 5 some reason.
Yeah, Tijuana Taxi, yes.
Right.
Yeah, aware. There's all sorts of things. But yes, it was a little surprising to him how well he did with Tijuana Brass, obviously, as they called it. But he was very, very interesting and certainly had an earlier career that most people are unaware of. But good for him.
Yeah. I think he's still with us.
Still with us, I think. Isn't he like March 31st or something, if I recall? I think.
I don't know why
I know that, but I'm pretty sure his birthday is March 31st. So he'd be, a 90. Well, he was at Fairfax High in 52 for sure. I don't know if he graduated in 53 or when, but yeah, he was at Fairfax High, which was, where Phil Spector later would go and all that.
So how about if you get a chance, you play Tijuana Taxi when you get a chance.
I will.
And again, you're the walking book of knowledge here on all this stuff, which is really interesting. So
useless information, but I wish whoever is writing these things would go back to Dory Records to get the real earlier days of him. And I don't see that anywhere in print. Oh well.
I appreciate the knowledge and the conversation. Thank you, Raleigh.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. All right, so yes, Tijuana, that's the way they said it, Taxi. We will do that for sure. And let me write that down with Ken. And I promised Nina Simone, but I think I need to find Elvis because I don't want the birthday to go unnoticed for Lois here. All right, so all that and more coming up in your calls, I hope, 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio.
Want a little sugar in my bowl. I want a little sweetness down in my soul. I could stand some loving, oh so bad. I feel so funny, I feel so sad. I want a little steam on my clothes. Maybe I can fix things up so they'll go. What's the matter, Daddy? Come on, save my soul. I need some sugar in my bowl. I ain't fooling. I want some sugar in my bowl.
WGN WGN Radio. Yeah, Nina Simone. I want a little sugar in my bowl, and there you have that. And I should have. I don't even know what label that was on. That's terrible. I pulled that from the computer, so I didn't actually see the vinyl. How terrible of me. All right, but it was on an album, Sings the Blues, I think, as I recall. All right, so we'll get to the rest of them, too, and some Herb Alpert, too, Tijuana Taxi, which actually came out before the Whipped Cream and Other Delights album. I think it was Goin' Places was that album in 65, but we'll find out. Several things of non-note, so to speak, but interrupt the show as the mood might hit you. States with the most mosquitoes. Now, I probably wouldn't have brought this up, except that it's top five, and it never occurred to me what number five might be. New Jersey? Yeah, well, a lot of bad things come from New Jersey, I guess. But yes, New Jersey is the ideal breeding ground for 60 species of mosquitoes that reside there, yeah, April to October. Georgia comes in at number four, Florida at number three, no shock there, California at number two, and of course Texas at number one by virtue of size alone, one would think. They've got 80 different species of mosquitoes in the Lone Star State, and certainly the eastern half with its warm, humid temperatures would be the perfect ground. But that said, you know, if you ask me what major city in Texas has the worst mosquito problem, I would have immediately said Houston, and I'd have been wrong. It's Dallas. Yeah, absolutely. All those swimming pools, I guess. I don't know. But Dallas is actually number two as far as cities go, behind Los Angeles for mosquito problems. And I would have thought, actually, that before we got to Los Angeles, we would have had Miami. Yeah, but apparently not. But apparently not only Dallas and Houston, but San Antonio, Tyler, Austin, and Waco are all in the top 50 of mosquito places. So if that's a problem, then keep that in mind for your next move. Now, we have several other things of non-note. And again, James is wonderful with links. And Bob, Engineer Bob, is just terrific. All things that mean absolutely nothing, but have some interest to them. Like 10 strange conditions that have baffled doctors throughout history? Well, let's see. Sleeping Beauty Syndrome. Well, yeah, sleeping 20 hours a day sounds good to me. That's a dream come true, but apparently it is a syndrome, Klein-Levin syndrome, and they call it Sleeping Beauty syndrome, where individuals excessively sleep for hours, even days. God, I remember one time a doctor had given me a drug, not for sleeplessness or anything, for something else, but it had a complete side effect. And I literally, I don't think I woke up for like 3 days. You know, there were people around me who thought I was dead. But no, apparently this is an actual condition where people can sleep for days and then be confused, disoriented, and exhibit unusual behaviors like binge eating. And they don't know what causes that. All right, mad cow disease. Now these are fighting words, and now we might get political, but let's not. It is obviously it affects cows, the brain and spinal cords, as BSE, bovine spongiform encephalopathy. But there is an issue with whether it is transmitted to humans. Yeah, well, they say it is, and it can be a fatal brain disease. However, well, we'll leave it right there. We'll talk about the news, and then we'll come back to why that's even a thing, because there is a certain amount of controversy there. Coming up on WGN Radio.
Wise men say only fools rush in, but I can't help falling in love with you. Shall surely to the sea. Darling, so it goes, some things are meant to be. Take my hand, take my whole life too, for I can't help falling in love with you.
WGN Elvis Presley, of course, 1961, RCA. It was a single. And, of course, it's also from the Blue Hawaii album because it was in the movie. And that was Hugo and Luigi, production team of note, who actually wrote that. And, of course, like all of the stuff for Elvis at the time, big, big hit. It was recorded in L.A. At Radio Recorders, right on in Hollywood. So there. And redone by everybody from Perry Como to Keeley Smith. But the interesting one there is Pearl Jam used to do it in concert. I can't even imagine, but okay, fine. And it was something that, of course, Elvis did in concert all the time. You very often closed with it. All right, so that is for Lois, the birthday girl Lois, Mike's wife. Happy, happy birthday, Lois. So that's terrific. All right, we've got Eduardo, who is in Tampa, going to tell us about Job Search 2026. So how did it go today?
Yeah, so yesterday I went to, I guess you could call it like some kind of HR, and I got a photo taken, they drew blood, I had to do urine tests, get vaccinated.
Vaccinated? So, what kind of vaccine?
I think it's the TB.
Huh.
I think it's TB. Yeah. Huh. It hurt. I had to take like a couple aspirin because my arm started to hurt.
Okay.
But it went away. But I'll be fine.
Huh.
Yeah. But just prerequisite. And then they send me an email, and I get to choose it's some kind of uniform, I guess, for work.
Yeah.
So, but I got to follow up with them tomorrow about something about that.
Okay.
And then I have orientation May 11th.
Okay.
The soups will be there. The director will be there for the department will be there.
Okay.
So it's like 2 days, May 11th and 12th. And then after that, I guess I'll just be, you know, working whatever my shift is. But I mean, my hours are 11 to 11.
Okay. 11 p.m. to 11 a.m.
11 a.m. to 11 p.m.
Oh, 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. Oh, yeah. Man. All right. Well, okay. So you're going to be a daytime
like
guy.
Okay. Yeah, that's second. I mean, the first is 7 a.m. to 7 p.m.
Okay.
And then comes that one. So.
Okay. All right. 11 to 11. All right. And you'll be doing transport?
Yeah, patient transport, right.
Okay. Well, it'll be interesting. Good. Well, it's a job.
I'll be looking forward to it. Yeah. It should be interesting. You know, you won't be like stuck behind a terminal, and I mean, you'll be back and forth. So.
Yeah.
Get to talk to people. You know, see them getting well or going for a test or something. So,
well, hopefully you'll see them in every possible condition, no doubt.
Yeah, hopefully they'll be very good, you know.
Yeah.
Like the one time when I was shattering, this one lady, she had like some kind of neck brace or something, and I could tell she couldn't move her neck very well, but she was going in for, we moved it for a test.
Uh-huh.
So hopefully we won't see too much of that, but hopefully we'll see people getting well and up on their way in their 2 feet.
Yeah. All right, well, good.
It should be interesting, yeah. I mean, it'll be a first for me since I never worked in a hospital, so. But,
well,
I always wanted to work for a hospital, so I thought it'd be an interesting adventure.
Yes, now you'll know. I'm sure you're going to have plenty of stuff to talk about. All right. Good.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah. I like my day today because I went to the Florida Blue and I did a, we did like a, some kind of sign on a board, a wooden board.
Yeah.
Like we sanded and we painted over there. It was very interesting. I never done that. So.
Huh.
And then I had a guy, check this out, Raleigh. Then I had a guy, remember I told you about the accident with the bumper?
Yeah.
So They never were able to fix it because that car was like 9 years old. So,
okay. All right.
I just had to like do this on my own. I got a bumper from 16 because
right.
I have a Kia Forte.
Right.
Yeah, mine is a 17, but I got a so I ripped off a bumper from a 16.
Yeah.
And I just had a guy tonight correct it because it was like sticking out. Some mechanic nearby put it on, but he didn't put it in right.
Yeah.
But the guy that came today, he did his handiwork and he got it in there. He had to like shave some kind of like plastic or something from the back so that way it would fit in beer nicely. Now it does not stick out.
Good.
So now it looks fine.
Excellent. Yeah, a trip to the junkyard can be very rewarding.
Yeah, but it looks nice. I mean, and the one that I got is silver because mine's the silver, so I didn't have to paint it. So that's great news.
That's nice. Does it match?
It's about hooking it up the correct way.
And does it match?
Oh yeah.
Oh yay.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, it's only off by. It's only a year.
Yeah, no, I know. I know. Well,
I mean, it's
silver. You never know. Good. I'm delighted. That's a good haul. Very good.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad it worked. So.
All right.
Now it looks like I never had an accident, so it looks, you know, it looks like it should look.
Good. Excellent. Well, that's a nice fix. I'm kind of glad that they couldn't fix it, because if they could have, it would have cost a lot more.
Yeah, I'm afraid that, I mean, they're only going to be doing them on these newer cars, I mean, but some car that's almost 10 years old, they just don't want to bother.
Yeah, that's so true. And if it's 20 years old, I don't care if it's a fender bender. They just say, well, totaled. Yeah, I know. Sad.
Right.
True.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, good deal. Thanks.
All right.
Talk to you soon.
What's your schedule for tomorrow?
Oh, no.
In case I got something interesting to call it.
And I hope you will. From now until probably Labor Day, it is Monday through Thursday from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. live.
Okay.
Okay, good.
I'll be listening. Okay.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Raleigh.
Okay, thank you. And, of course, Friday, Monday Night Trivia replays. So there. Yes. And I'm too old to do 5 nights a week. You're lucky I've got 4. I know we do talk about that. The day will come when it's only 3. But so far, so good. I'm holding up reasonably well. All right. So I've got several of things to discuss. Including the Prego pasta lid. Yeah, the jar that's spying on your dinner table. Well, you won't believe it. But before we get there, we've got Cindy, and Cindy is in Chicago. So, Cindy, welcome back to WGN Radio. What's happening tonight?
Yeah, I moved, you know, Mike and I moved here to this condo for, you know, less work and kind of quiet and just retiring, you know, it's just been the people on the first floor are just arguing with the people on the second floor on the other side constantly. And
but by the way, do you mean yelling back and forth?
Well, texting, but yeah, sometimes they do, and sometimes they text real crazy.
But if it's texting, you're not hearing it, I don't think.
Well, I mean, everyone has the 6-way texting for the whole building to see.
Uh-huh.
So I just lost patience and said, well, I was nice at first, like everyone, and my humorless Baptist side is going to come out like a witch now, anyhow. I don't even remember what I texted. I was on some kind of Crestor, and I can't remember what I said to anyone.
Well, why exactly did you get involved?
Because I can't stand any more of it. Everyone wants quiet here, and I'm the one who has to clean up the mess from when they dump their pop all over. I'm the educated one, and I'm the one who's got to do it, because nobody else is going to
do it. What if you don't do it?
And we'll get ants, and they'll infest the place with pop all over the rug in the hallway, and then they dump their garbage leaks. There's ants all over their garbage, and we got to clean that up. I mean, it's my... Okay, the controller depended on me
to do the dirty work. And that's my job. I know my way around the, I had three business laws. Now he's bragging his wife is a lawyer now. She's not going to be no lawyer. She's going to be a paralegal. And she hasn't passed the bar yet.
Well, if she's going to be a paralegal, she doesn't need to pass the bar.
Well, they're bragging she's a lawyer though, but she's not going. All she went to law school, and she's not. But then anyhow, so he's bragging, like trying to intimidate me with my text messages. Oh, that his brother's on the Chicago Police Department, and his wife's going to be a lawyer. No, I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, I got educated to treat people like garbage. That was the reason. So then I'm like, well, my neighbor next door, I grew up with her, and she was Lisa Madigan, the attorney general of the state, chief of staff, mm-hmm. and now she's the governor of the state of Illinois, chief legal counsel.
Mm-hmm.
What I said, what do you think we all are? You're a bunch of orphans in this?
Mm-hmm.
And the one he's fighting with, she knows the police chief.
Uh-huh. I don't know what to tell you. You come up with more problems than anyone who calls. I think you just need to find a way to stay out of it and mind your own business.
No, it is my business because I got to live here, and there's too much arguing.
Well, then I guess go ahead and argue. No reason to talk about it.
Well, no, I'm just going to get rid of these people.
What?
How
will you do that? Hello?
I can't answer that right now because... I'm not going to murder them or anything. I'm just going to get rid of them like an accountant would.
Uh-huh.
Drive them crazy and get rid of them. If I have to call the police, uh-huh. if there's drilling after 10 o'clock, after 9 o'clock at night, and he said, are you accusing me of it? Like he's going to sue me? You're accusing me? I'm going to say, I just said, well, I'm just going to call the police. And the police will figure out where the noise is coming from, and I'm not going to aggravate myself.
Very good. All right. I can see what's coming. But all right. Keep us posted. Let us know if you're in jail.
Well, if they check my ID when the police come, it's always clean.
Ah. Uh-huh. All right. Well, like I say, I don't know what to say. I have a feeling communal living was really not in your best interest.
That's it. But then, I couldn't afford like $12,000 in property taxes at the house.
Well, that is, right. Okay. Good luck. Thanks. Appreciate it. Yeah. Property taxes are crazy. And Illinois is certainly one of the big offenders on that. I have a friend in the Chicago area who his property tax bill is $70,000 a year. And I said, you don't own your house. You're renting it from the city. Yeah, I just don't get it. But I've heard of high property taxes. But man, some states like New Jersey's bad, New York is bad, but Illinois, yeah, over the top. $12,000 in property taxes. Damn. All right. So 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh. So Prego wants to spice up your meal, not in the way you're thinking. Details coming up on WGN Radio.
There's one pet I love to pet, and every evening we get set. I stroke it every chance I get. It's my girl's pussy. Never scampers, never purrs, but I love the thrills it stirs. And it's so cheap because it's hers. It's my girl's pussy. Sometimes it goes out at night, returns at break of dawn. No matter what the weather's like, it's always nice and warm. Always neat and always clean, never bossy, never mean. Works just like a clean machine, that's my girl's pussy. All right, little pussy, come to daddy now. That's it. What do you say to me? That's what I like to hear. Now listen.
I got something to say to you too.
Meow.
It goes like this. You like it?
Meow.
I thought you would. Listen, one more thing to tell you. Now, sometimes it goes out at night, returns at break of dawn. No matter what the weather's like, it's always nice and warm. Never scampers, never purrs, but I like the thrills it stirs. And it's so cheap because it's hers, it's my girl's pussy.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Yes, that's the 1977 version of that with Ian Whitcomb, and a fine song it is. But you know, it's a cover, to say the least. This goes back to 1931, and we were talking about Dirty Blues there. And in 1931, it was recorded by a British bandleader, probably why Ian Whitcomb was very aware of it, clarinetist Harry Roy and his Bat Club Boys. And, of course, obviously a double entendre song, and Harry Roy wrote it, and he's a singer on the track as well. Oriole Records, as far as that. It's considered a foxtrot, and there you have it. It's a B-side, the A-side of the record. Or I don't know, maybe it was the A-side. If You Haven't Got Love was on the other side, so I shouldn't say I know that either way. But yeah, several versions of that, to say the least. All right, so 888-876-5593. 8888 Raleigh. And we'll start with Chris, and then we're going to take a break for the news here. But speaking of the news, I know Chris has all been involved in being interested in WSPA TV7's 70th anniversary, and actually the actual date is today, 70 years ago, 1956. So there you have it.
Hey, happy anniversary to TV7.
Yes, indeed. Today's the big day.
Oh, yes. Yeah, but they didn't do nothing special. They just showed, like, old clips from the past.
Okay.
Because I remember the Weathermans, we had Jack Roper. Now, he was a staple of TV7.
Well, the guy who founded it was Walter Brown. Do they have any stuff on him?
Probably not. I just looked at the old pictures, but I think they talked about him because he the one started it.
Yes, he did.
And got it off the ground.
Yep, April 29th, 1956 in Spartanburg. And originally it was just like downtown,
there.
Right, and then moved to big studios in Spartanburg and Greenville as well. Yes.
Yep. And WGVL signed off that UHF because they was against 7 going on the air.
Uh-huh.
But Channel 40 still on.
Yep. So, yes, this is the big date. All right, 70 years.
70 years, and I remember the familiar faces like Annette Estes, and Lisa Gibbons got her start on 7, and Pamela Graham, Tom Crabtree, you name it.
Right.
It was a good show to channel to watch back in the day.
Yeah, and it gave a relatively small market local television. Didn't have to worry about CATV and trying to bring it in from Charlotte or what have you. So, yeah.
Yeah, because you had all the CBS shows on that channel.
Right, right.
Yeah,
and,
WBTV a closed circuit?
Well, what do you mean closed circuit? I mean, WBT was...
CATV.
Sure. I mean, CATV, Community Antenna Television, was used throughout the country, mostly in markets that could not get over-the-air television. Hang on. Don't go away. We're in the news. All right. Blew that.
Okay.
Stay where you are. Yeah. Completely blew it. Thought I wouldn't either, but yeah, that's life. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. So there it is. And that was Ken and Prospect Heights who wanted to hear it. Tijuana Taxi, A&M Records, 1965 single, and was also on Going Places, which was the album that preceded Whipped Cream and Other Delights. So that's the deal on that. All right, now we're going to get back to Chris here in Greenwood. Don't go away, Chris. Haven't forgotten about you yet. And we'll do that. But yeah, because the SPA lead-up was an interesting battle, to say the least. But Scott is a first-time caller in Valpo, so welcome to WGN Radio.
Hi. I heard you say in the past that you were a fill-in for Art Bell.
Yeah, I was his dedicated replacement in 1999 and 2000 till I walked.
That's cool. Why'd you walk?
Behind-the-scenes stuff, a number of things, but the biggest of which is they wanted me to endorse products that I wouldn't endorse, like ingestibles.
Ah, okay, cool. He always used to play this one song, Vedra.
Oh, you're right, exactly. Yeah, that's Nancy Sinatra Jr. and Lee Hazelwood.
Really?
Yes, it's called Some Velvet Morning. Yeah.
Yeah,
and in Some Velvet, okay. Yeah, the title Some Velvet Morning, and it's on reprise, and the line in it, Phaedra is her name, yes, Some Velvet Morning When I'm Straight, yes.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, okay, of course.
That's cool.
It was a hit.
I've never heard it. It was way before my time, but it's a haunting song.
Yeah, Some Velvet Morning When I'm Straight. Right, I'm going to open... Yeah. No, I say it was a big hit. I'm going to open up your gate and maybe tell you about Phaedra and how she gave me life and how she made it end. Some Velvet Morning When I'm Straight. Flowers growing on a hill, dragonflies... I had to play this. So I remember it well. Yeah.
Hey, can I make that a request?
Yeah, you want to hear it, huh? Okay. All right. Let me write this down, Scott. You're the only person I think has ever requested this. But that's all right. Brings back the 60s right there. All right, I'll do it.
Thank you.
Call me again. Thank you for calling, Scott. I appreciate it.
Okay.
All right. So, yes. All right. Yeah, no, it was a quasi-hit. Yeah. Played ad nauseum for a while there. All right. So, wrote that down and... Some Velvet Morning, let me get that too. And I'll try to tonight, although we only have three left. All right, now back to Chris in Greenwood. So what's interesting to me, Chris, is the backstory of this station. Because, you know, when television really blossomed after World War II, it was a cluster fairly quickly because there were not enough places on the dial and far too many people wanting them. And so in 1948, the... FCC went ahead and enacted a freeze on television licenses. And so from 48 to 52, they wouldn't allow for any new stations. And at the time, there were 12 existing VHF channels. And that was it. There was no U at all. And so when they finally lifted the freeze, which I think was April of 52, they came up with UHF and things of this nature. But SPA, of course, was a very in-demand frequency to say the least, Channel 7. And so they, the first thing is people were very surprised that the license wouldn't go to the state capital, to Columbia, that it would go to Spartanburg. There was all sorts of deals about that. And then what happened is, of course, you had a couple radio stations right in Greenville, Spartanburg, ORD, one of them, that certainly didn't want to see this happen. So this fight lasted for years. That preceded it. And when the license was finally granted, it wound up, as you know, going where it did. So that was the deal on that. But it was quite the fight.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, there was other radio stations or TV stations rejected 7 going on the air. You think WESD and FBC rejected that?
Well, now, interestingly, remember, WORD had a construction permit for it in 53. I don't know if you're aware of that. But so there were all sorts of things that came into play there. So, then the other deal was Walter Brown, the guy I mentioned, got Channel 7 assigned to Spartanburg, not Columbia. And, what was interesting is the proposed table of allotments left Spartanburg off the list entirely. And so Brown went to the governor, and he uses influence and all that, and caused the FCC to move 7 from Columbia to Spartanburg. And so that was a big deal. And then there were other competitors trying for it. And then the guys who had WIS, which was Channel 10 in Columbia, they wanted it. But ultimately, that was disallowed because of overlapping coverage. But there was a lot of fights as far as that goes. And part of it had to do with not only getting radio, but an FM station that was already owned and all that. And so it wasn't Walter Brown had to sell off WORD to acquire SPA. And so it was a mess. And then originally this was going to be on Hogback Mountain, which is, not exactly right in town, obviously. But they allowed it. There were all sorts of messes there. So anyway, it went through a lot of different things, and that was the deal. And UHF stations got in the mix and were having a fit and all that. So yeah, it was a hard-won license, but finally it debuted after all the stuff, and you can read about it. I'm sure this is all online because it is so convoluted. But finally, April 29th, 1956, Channel 7, as we know it, debuted.
Yeah, that's right. And, WGBL 23 in Greenville.
Uh-huh.
They was one of the main people that was anti-7, and they went off the air that day.
Yeah.
And Channel 40 was one of them, but they went off just like a few days and went back home, and they're still on the air to this day.
There you go. And now, of course, it doesn't matter if you were a U or a V or anything. But back then, it sure did.
Yeah, because, we had only, like you said, WIS. That was the sole V in Columbia, and it had
right.
the donut.
Right.
Because, WBTW was Channel 8 originally, and it was a V.
Yep.
And WFBC Channel 4 in Greenville was a V. And... yeah, you're right. It was a lot of mess.
Well, and again, I don't think that they recognized initially how much overlap and how much interference and how many issues were going to arise from all these Vs. And so they almost had to come up with Us.
Yeah, because you got to pay a lot of power bills if you are a UHF.
Oh, isn't that the truth? You are so right about that. People who wonder why UHF failed, U stands for ultra, and that's ultra-high utility bills. I mean, it's not unusual to look at horizontal and vertical and see 1,000,000 watts. It's like, how the hell? So, yes, the money was huge.
Yeah, and Channel 40, because they was out of Anderson, and it was a small town.
Yep.
And Channel 40 had its share of off the airs, like over the years, but that's another story. But 7, when it first came on, it dominated, and it became like a full-fledged CBS affiliate. And
of course.
It didn't change no affiliations. And,
right.
And WBTV in Charlotte, because, they was close together, and
yes.
They were CBS's.
Yes.
And, if you had cable, you had 2 CBSs.
Well,
but in my cable system, we had 2 NBCs, Channel 4 and Channel 10 in Columbia.
Right, but that's when you get into cable. Before cable, CATV worked a little differently. But, before the FCC made its decision and allowed for licenses in March of 52, they were considering moving every station to UHF. And so that was, they were thinking about doing this, and there was a lot of talk. And of course, the people who were on the air, they weren't even talking about what it would cost them in terms of electricity, but they'd have to change all the equipment and all that kind of stuff. But that was one thing that was on the table for a while.
Yeah, and also that downtown on Main Street where Channel 7 used to be, they had a fire in 1960, I think.
Mm-hmm.
and they had to borrow some equipment from the different stations, like four.
Right.
So they had a huge fire.
Right. And everybody rose to the occasion, and it turned out to be fine.
And that was the first station light to be in color.
Yeah. Well, and color was another big cluster in terms of getting that standardized and approved, of course. Hard to believe what we went through and how relatively recent it's been.
And I think they had a helicopter at one time, and I remember when it used to be Eyewitness News because,
right,
you know, most Channel 7s, they were ABC, and they had the Eyewitness News name on it, but our CBS.
Yeah, well, absolutely. So a lot of interesting history, and happy birthday to them, and I'm glad that Nexstar still has them, and they're doing well.
Oh, yeah, but it was good when Spartan Radio Casting had them until Media General came in and took it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Spartan was the first owner, and that was Walter Brown, and he really loved it, and he was really into it. And, yeah, we don't need to talk about Media General.
Oh, yeah, because Spartan Radio Casting, they were up their game, and he was just the one-man band on the TV station.
Yep.
And dominated the CBS and no other stations.
Yep. So it was interesting. And so, yes, the second VHF station in upstate South Carolina. And the studios, yeah, that fire in 1960, that was, I think, May of 60. And then they rebuilt another site downtown. And then in 79, they moved to where they are now, I think.
Yep, between I-85 and I-26 interchange.
Perfect. So, yeah.
Yeah, and there's a two-story building. I went in there two times.
Well, good.
And they had I loved it. I like to tour it again one day.
All right. Well, I'm sure you can.
Yeah. And they got a huge studio.
Well, sure. All right.
Yeah,
well,
and before I go, can I request a song?
All right. You don't do that too often. Let me find a sheet of paper so I won't lose the request. And what is it you want to hear?
Since I saw the new Michael movie Tuesday, since it's yesterday.
Yeah.
He killed it on that Human Nature when he was at some stadium, but I like to hear the Human Nature live at Wembley Stadium in 1988. It sounds the exact same way that it did in the movie.
All right. I'll look for that. I know I've got Human Nature, but I'll look for it at Wembley, and we'll play it. All right, thanks. Appreciate it, Chris. Good
You're
talking
welcome.
To you. Okay, so 888-876-5593. Mark and Aurora up next here on WGN Radio.
Some velvet morning when I'm straight, I'm gonna open up your gate and maybe tell you about Phaedra and how she gave me life and how she made some velvet morning when I'm straight.
Flowers growing on a hill, dragonflies and daffodils learn from us very much. Look at us, but do
Phaedra and how she gave me life and how she made it in. Some velvet morning when I...
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and that's for Scott, our first-time caller from Valpo, Some Velvet Morning When I'm Straight, 1967 on Reprise. All right, so Mark is in Aurora. We'll start talking to him before the news, and hopefully he'll remember to break when the news is coming. Not my strong suit. So, Mark, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Well, I have I had two items when I called. Now I have four items that I love that song, Some Velvet Morning, and the first place I heard it was MTV, MeTV FM. Now, do you think that song just might have some double entendre in it?
Lee Hazelwood swears it doesn't, but I don't know.
Yeah. Well, MeTV FM is on 87.5,
right,
or the 87.7. Five, they profess to be, but my Crane radio tells me they're on 87.74. Now, here's what I want to know. Why has TV never had a Channel 1?
Oh, it does have a Channel 1. We just don't get it.
Oh, what does Channel 1 carry?
I don't think there's anything in use right now. You
okay.
know, but it certainly has a history. It doesn't exist for broadcasting. They removed it in 1948. And the reason they did,
okay,
at the time, it was interfering with two-way radio. And so you had a lot of CATV providers and then later cable providers who used Channel 1 for local news. And, of course, there was a syndicated deal for a while on Channel 1 News, if you remember that, that was broadcast into schools from 1990 to, like, 2018 or something. And that was the deal. And then TV 1 was a cable channel. It was targeting African Americans. So that was the deal. It's there, but they removed it. And Adam told me it's time for news. Thank God. All right, so hang on. Don't go away on WGN.
Okay, I'll stay with you.
He's stone cold dead in the market. I ain't kill nobody but my husband. That night he went out drinking, and when he came home he gave me a beating. So I catch up the rolling pin and went to walk on his head until I kill him. Family that's swearing to kill me. All of his family that's swearing to kill me. All of his family that's swearing to kill me. And if I kill him, he had it coming. Now he's
WGN Radio. There's the original, Wilmuth Houdini. Yeah, it was in shellac, and it was one of those shellacs that had like three songs on one side, three on the other. And he had it coming was on the A side there, and that's the deal. So I had to look him up. I said nobody is named Wilmuth Houdini. Well, no, he isn't named Wilmuth Houdini, but he adopted that as a stage name. I forget his last name started with an H, but I don't remember what it is. But anyway, that's the deal. So that's where Ella Fitzgerald and Louis Jordan got it. From Wilmuth Houdini, and quite the Calypso career as far as that goes. So yeah, not the only thing. Hendrix, that was his last name, Hendrix. Yeah, all right, and older guy too. Born in the 1800s, and a big Calypso history on this guy, and he was cutting records for Decca early on, and like 1920s, and then. He wrote it in 1939. He had it coming. And, of course, when Ella Fitzgerald and Louis Jordan did it, they gave it a new title, Stone Cold Dead in the Market. And it was topping the R&B charts for like 7 weeks or something. And, yeah, it got pop play as well. And so got a lot of recognition, and certainly in the Caribbean community. So we moved to New York. And, you know, Calypsoans in Trinidad claimed he was stealing their ideas and capitalizing on them in the United States. And who knows? He died in 1973 in New York City, buried in the Bronx. So there you have it. 888-876-5593. Back to Mark in Aurora. Sorry for that, Mark. Where are we? Yeah, so we've disposed of Channel 1.
Well,
what's our next topic?
Well, I was gonna tell you that one of my friends has one of the older Sea Crane radios, which picks up the audio for channels 2 through 6, and there's nothing there now.
Well, channels,
he's got a useless band on his radio.
Channel six.
Well, he told me there's
channel
nothing
six.
There.
Channel six is actually where you're hearing that me TV radio. That's
yes.
So channel,
right.
Channel six is absolutely on the FM band, and you are seeing some radio stations, some translators and stuff getting licensed to it.
And radio friends have told me that the holders of educational radio made a stink about it because they said, those are our frequencies. You don't have any right as a commercial rock station to have 87.7, but they got it anyway.
Well, you see, what do you mean? Yeah, but I don't think 87.7 was included in non, and actually it's not educational, it's non-com, in the non-com band.
No, I don't think so. I think you're right.
So, you know, that's
and,
one of the, everybody who had, you know, an FM radio, say, in their car years ago and had a Channel 6, you know, you absolutely could dial down and hear it. But the non-com band is 88.1 to 91.9. And so to say that they don't have any right to it, it was not part of the non-com.
No, but they were... they were just complaining because they were used to having the lower frequencies. But you mentioned the increased complications of color transmission. Now, Raleigh, I know that you never liked AM stereo, and I know that it doesn't exist anymore,
or only exists
on a few stations. Let me tell you my thought. I think that AM stereo could have used something analogous to the color burst that's used on color television. That would have virtually eliminated the phasing problems.
Okay, here's the problem. AM stereo.
Yeah.
AM stereo was dead in the water because the FCC refused to standardize a system.
Yes.
So
yes.
Anything else is superfluous, and so you had.
Oh, it was a big jumble.
Yeah, you had Con, and you had Motorola and Sequoia, all the things, and so without that standardization, the rest of the discussion doesn't matter.
Yeah. Now I thought the Con Hazeltine had one great advantage, and that was that you could use two different radios to get stereo.
Well, of course. Well, that was what Leonard Kahn had been doing that for over a decade for AM stereo. He did that on Mexican stations, of course.
But as Aubrey Mumpower, formerly of WGN Engineering, said, that ship has long since sailed.
That's correct.
And
that's absolutely correct.
Because I liked AM stereo, even though it had its phasing problems, but I find that the WWV geomagnetic announcements are back on the air, and
good.
I don't know why they were gone.
Okay, good.
But they're back.
Excellent.
They're back.
Glad to hear it.
And when you brought up the thing about a text reader, I honestly don't know, because the voiceover feature on my iPhone is very convincing. I have one Australian voice and one velvety alto English voice, and I tell you, they sound real enough that it would be hard to tell the difference unless you listen very carefully.
Yes, that's absolutely what's going on with technology.
Yeah.
You hear that all the time.
Yeah.
You can no longer confidently say that it's not. That it's not a form of voice text, of course.
And I just want to send out warm greetings to Jim from Richmond. I'm glad you're still with us. And I want to repeat what I said before. If you ever kill yourself, you will deeply and severely hurt those of us who care about you, we will go on with our lives because we have to, but we don't want you to do away with yourself, and I'm glad you didn't. And stay with us, fella. You're going to get through this.
All right. Thanks for calling. I appreciate it.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. So 888-876-5593, 8888 Raleigh. Stacy in Algonquin, welcome back to WGN. How are you, Stacy?
Hey, Raleigh. Oh, I'm terrific.
Good.
I just wanted to call and tell you I had a birthday on April 21st.
Happy, happy. How did you celebrate?
Oh, at, oh, God, they made, you know, you get a big dinner and, like, a little cake and everything, and everybody sang happy birthday in the dining room.
Good.
No, it was really great.
Yes.
And then on the 27th was my anniversary.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So that was Monday. That that had to be a tough day.
I know.
Yeah.
But I've been strong.
And
I just thought I'd have to call Raleigh.
Yeah. No, I'm glad you did. And you're surrounded by people, which is so important to have that kind of a support group so that you know you're not alone. It will never take the place of Raldo.
They're very nice.
Right, exactly. It'll never take the place of Raldo, but knowing that you're not alone makes all the difference.
Oh, I know. I know. And, oh, I heard our song, Falling in Love Again.
Oh, yes. Elvis Presley.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good.
Can I request a different song by Lou Rawls?
Which one?
Anyone that you would like.
No, you got to tell me which one, because, you know, I'll go back and find stuff from his jazz period, because I'm not a fan of his 70s stuff.
Actually, I forgot.
Oh, well. Do you know what year he recorded it?
Oh, no. Oh, my gosh. No, I like all Lou Rawls and the Delphonics I like.
Yeah, I know that. We played some Delphonics for you.
And let's see, how about, do you do, like, Connie Francis?
Yeah, sure, I do whatever you want, unless I hate it. So what by Connie Francis do you want?
Where the Boys Are, or something peppy.
Lipstick on My Collar?
That's good.
Okay. Yeah, and of course, the song that's amazed everybody, including her before she died, is Pretty Little Baby became a hit again.
That would be good. That's good.
Okay. All right, sure, we'll play some of those.
So, I'm sorry I kind of waited too long. You know, I should have called you before.
Well, that's okay. You were busy celebrating, and I think that's wonderful.
I know. And, we also do down in the town square, it's beach ball volleyball.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
Yeah, where, you know, there's like three chairs on the other side, and Rachel puts up like a net in the middle, and we use the, it's not a volleyball. It's like a balloon.
Yeah, like a beach ball,
Yeah.
Sure. Well, fun.
So it's good to hear from you.
Well, you too. You're sounding good, and that's terrific.
And, you know, I'm just thinking good things, nothing bad, just fabulous things. That's just wonderful. Everything good, nothing bad.
That's wonderful. Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that really was a help was getting out of that house and getting into the building you're in now. And that's one of the reasons why I keep harping on Jim to get out of Richmond, get somewhere where there are people, because it makes all the difference. Now, they got to be the right people. I mean, it can be the road to hell, too. But if you get a good group of people, it makes all the difference.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah.
So you and John are good?
Yeah.
You're healthy?
Well, I won't go that far. But
okay.
John, John's closest friend going back to Boy Scouts in grade school. He's going to see this weekend because, unfortunately, his closest friend died recently, and they're having a memorial service, and that's a tough one. But he has another kid that he knew from Boy Scouts that he's going to spend the afternoon with, so that's great. So he's off to Boston for a few days.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah. And that's it.
No, but I thought... I have to call Raleigh.
Well, I'm glad that you checked in, and a happy belated birthday. You're sounding wonderful.
Thank you.
It's just great.
Thank you.
All right, and I promise some Connie Francis.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
I'll talk to you soon, Raleigh.
Okay, good. Counting on it. All right. Now, it might not be tonight. It might be tomorrow night, but yeah. Yeah, Pretty Little Baby is such a shock because the record never was a hit. She didn't even remember that she recorded it, and next thing you know, it just has taken off a life of its own. All right, so 888-876-5593. If it's on your mind, it'll be on mine. And we've got another, 15 minutes. It's a little less than that. See, I can't tell time. That's how I blow the brakes. But I won't blow this one coming up on WGN Radio.
Pretty little baby. Baby, you say that maybe you'll be thinking of me and try to love me, pretty little baby. I'm hoping that you do. You can ask the flowers. I sit for hours telling all the bluebirds, the bill and coo birds, pretty little baby. I'm so in love with you. Both of us are young, puppy love must have its day. Don't you know it's much more fun to love while the heart is young and gay? Meet me at the car hop or at the pop shop. Meet me in the moonlight or in the daylight. Pretty little baby, I'm so in love with you.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and strangest story ever, I think. This was actually on a 1962 album, Connie Francis sings secondhand love songs and other hits. Nora Wilson actually co-produced that song. And Nora, you know, wrote Most Beautiful Girl and all sorts of other stuff and did a lot of work with Billy Sherrill and all that. So anyway, the interesting thing about this is no one thought about this as much of a record, but the MGM, which is where it was recorded and who the label was, they wanted to see if they could make it an international hit somehow. Well, it wasn't going to be a hit in the U.S. I don't even think they ever released it. I know they didn't release it as a single from the album. But they had a version in French and Japanese and Spanish and German and Italian and in Swedish. And that was not unusual to cause artists to have to do that back then. And so it was released as a B-side on MGM in 62, but I don't think that was released in America. It could have been, but I don't think so. In any event, it did absolutely nothing. Nobody thought of that song, to say the least. And next thing you know, it becomes a TikTok sensation. Shortly before she died, actually, and initially she said, you know, I don't know this record. And when she heard it, she. And so she'd forgotten completely about it. I think the only reason she remembered when she heard it was because they tortured her with doing it in so many languages. But bottom line is it was having the height of resurgence when she died. So, interesting and fitting. And so that was the deal on Pretty Little Baby that I have no idea, and I've never seen, maybe there's been articles or whatever, on who on TikTok or Instagram or one of those found it and used it, because it doesn't seem to have any correlation to anything that was going on. And of course now released all the time all over the place, but as far as back then, yeah, Sadly, Nora Wilson's no longer with us, but he was a hoot. When I worked at the CBS building in Nashville, I used to just enjoy sitting with him. And he did work for Charlie Rich, other than Most Beautiful Girl, but David Houston and Tammy and George, of course, and Joe Stampley, who I liked a lot, and others, to say the least. Sadly, died. It's got to be like nine, 10 years ago now, heart failure set. He was overweight and always, like, from birth. And so made it to 79, though. All right, so rest in peace. It's David Allen Coe. You heard that on the news. David Allen Coe died, and he made it a lot longer than I ever thought he would. David Allen Coe was so interesting because he invented his own history. He originally came to Nashville in about 1967. He actually was kind of a blues-oriented guy. His favorite artist was Johnny Ace, I remember. And did nothing, but he sort of migrated to country. Shelby Singleton, actually, is the guy who was wonderful, and he had Plantation Records at the time. He had signed him, and so got him more in a country vein. And so he started these rumors about himself, like he had murdered people in prison and all that. He actually did reform school type stint, but he didn't murder anybody. But, you know, I mean, all the gals on Music Row were scared to death of him, and he showed up in this hearse. Yeah, he had a hearse. And had a band, I think it was like Ladysmith or something, and it was all these skanky-looking gals. Okay, that's not charitable, but I don't know how else to describe it. In any event, he dressed in rhinestones. And the backstory on that was even funnier than the rest of this bit, because he had gone to talk to Mel Tillis. And he was in Mel's office when Mel had opened a closet for something that he was getting. And David Allen Coe sees all these rhinestone suits and just goes gaga over them. And Mel said, I wouldn't wear this stuff anymore. I wouldn't wear this. You want it? And so, of course, he did want it. And then later, kind of pimping Glenn Campbell with Rhinestone Cowboy, he became the Rhinestone guy. But as I say, the big thing was inventing this horrible backstory that just wasn't really true. I mean, he wasn't necessarily a good guy, so to speak. He had issues, but he certainly wasn't the way he made himself out. Now, in addition to loving Johnny Ace, and I don't know if any of this is going to be in any of the obits, but he supposedly had done some prison time with Screamin' Jay Hawkins. If so, man, that would have been worth the stint alone. And he said that's who encouraged him to write songs. But again, this is David Allen Coe, so who knows? And he was married several times and had kids, and all of which, some of whom are famous and all that. And actually went back to jail. There was all sorts of tax evasion and that kind of stuff. But his debut album was a Penitentiary Blues. And And he was the opening act for Grand Funk Railroad. And then he signed a writing deal with Windows, which was Pete Drake's publishing company in Nashville. He actually was with Windows through most of the 70s and had this, like, cult following. And some artists actually recorded his stuff. I say that like I'm shocked, but Tanya Tucker, yeah. Her debut single, really, the thing that Billy Sherrill made her with, Would You Lay With Me in a Field of Stone, he wrote it. Billy Joe Spears, Souvenirs and all that was him. And ultimately, after Would You Lay With Me, he got signed by Columbia and started to do some stuff there. And what can I say? But it was the Mel Tillis story was just terrific. That's where he gets the suits. And of course, You Never Even Call Me By My Name. Steve Goodman wrote that, along with John Prine, who's not credited, but he didn't want to be. But it's Steve Goodman who had the line about the perfect country and western song. And I guess David Allen Coe actually wrote back to him and said, it's not the perfect country and western song because it doesn't include mama or trains or trucks or prison or getting drunk. And so Goodman added a version with that in it. And that was always a lot of fun. So, a true outlaw, but absolutely self-created as far as that goes. So rest in peace, David Allen Coe. Died today. All right, we'll pick it up 21 hours from now when we do it again. Until then, that's a wrap. I thank you for calling. I hope you'll do it again tomorrow night. I thank Adam for keeping us on the air and John for screening your calls. I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.
Crazed on Robbery, plus Predator Portrayal, and Phasing in the Grass. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 News. Real news, real stories, real fun. One bad grapple. This cat burglar, the brat's meow, confessing to hundreds of home heists that hauled in a heck of a lot, Rolling Stone reports. I Am Woman Fear Me score dishes the dirt on how to do it, suit up in scrubs and knock on the door. If the coast is clear, use a glass cutter to break in. Professes she was proud of her pinching power, but the feline-like filter finally got fingered and did a decade detained. Catwoman's now switched sides to score scratch selling home security on social sites. Epstein episodic. Jeffrey Epstein, the disgraced deal-dodging financier linked to trafficking teens, gets the TV treatment, with Laura Dern starring as the relentless reporter reigniting a record of ruin, riches, and reach. Its scandal, secrets, and survivor stories splashed across the small screen where power once protected and silence stayed sealed. Now the spotlight sears and the story stings, proving some sins don't stay buried, they broadcast. Flouthouse, blot in my backyard. Residents in a central Florida neighborhood turning their noses up at a piece of work of art. An eccentric sculptor's giant potty chair, 24 feet tall, is raising a real stink. The outlandish, outsized outhouse does have a hole in the seat with the painted face of a clown on the ground below. Fertile ground for Blight the Power, but the artist did get a permit and never promised anyone a rose garden. And that's what's happening. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 News.